Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Chaim Schmidt from the Kosher Scene. Please check out our regular blog at http://kosherscene.wordpress.com. The Kosher Scene, we have with us tonight a number of guests who will be coming in any moment. But let me start first with Kim Amzalag from Kosher Inspired Magazine, Mishpacha, actually a whole Mishpacha of magazines. How are you this evening, Kim?
Hi, Chaim. Thank you so much for having us on the show again tonight, and I'm delighted that we're going to be able to recreate the conversation that we had last night at Nargila Grill. We had a group of kosher food bloggers and amazing women across the spectrum of Jewish publishing and Jewish blog, radio, and food bloggers, and I think that we're very excited. So, Essie Berkowitz, I want to welcome. Essie, are you there?
There's nobody there.
I think we're gonna wait until everybody's on, but we're gonna have Essie Berkowitz from Fine Time Caravan will be back. Alessandro Rosati, who wrote a great article for us on Italian Jews in the current summer Indian issue. And we will also have Marlene from the Jewish Hostess from the Syrian community, as well as Shoshana from Kosher Shopahal. So I hope that you'll enjoy. I am delighted to tell you that last night we were hosted by Michael, new owner of Nargila Grill. And Nargila Grill is located on York Avenue and between 84th and 86th Street. Is Alessandro there? Are you there? Hi, Alessandro. Are you there?
There's nobody.
Alessandro, are you there? So anyway, Nargila Grill is a great restaurant serving Israeli-style foods with shawarma, shish kebab, falafel, couscous, great fish, french fries, hamburgers. Anyway, usually every couple of weeks, Michael's mother cooks Bukharian cuisine. And we are excited because next Wednesday night we'll be going back to the restaurant under technical difficulties. We will be hoping that you'll join us for Bukhari and cuisine at 1599 York Avenue between 84th and 86th in Manhattan. We're waiting for our other guests to join. They seem to be waiting in the queue. And I hear that Alessandra hears me, but I don't hear her. So I am hoping that we're going to be able to straighten this out. In the meantime, I'm going to tell you a little bit about the current issue of Kosher Inspired Magazine. Just on the newsstand last week, June 1st issue of Mishpacha. And we have some great stories. We went to the Kosher Cooking School in Brooklyn, and we are talking about Italian cooking. And as a result, Alessandro Rovati wrote that fabulous article I just mentioned about the Italian Jews. So Baba Ben-Sukran went to the cooking school, and we'll give you a first-hand view of what it's like and some of the Italian ways of preparing.
Ben, we already have someone online.
Asta and, sorry.
What?
Hello.
Anybody there?
Hello, who am I talking to?
Hi, this is Alessandra.
Hello,
can you hear me?
Alessandra Rovati from
yes,
Dina Ingenio.
It's nice hearing
your
voice.
Good evening. How are you?
Great. Thanks for having me.
No, I cannot hear you.
Can you tell us a little bit about your blog, please, Alessandra?
Yes, of course. I'll be happy to. My blog is called Dinner in Venice, a very evocative title, dinnerinvenice.com. That's where I'm from, and it's about kosher Italian cooking. I started it because I've always loved cooking, and I've been in the States for almost 20 years, and at the beginning I really missed the food from home and tried to recreate it. And for the past few years, I've also been teaching cooking classes, and at one point a couple months ago, I decided to put some of my recipes online and to give also some information about the history of Jewish Italian cooking, and it seems to have been pretty successful. There's a lot of there are a lot of recipes to give out, and there's also a lot of history behind them, because Italy, is really the only country in the diaspora where Jews have been uninterruptedly for more than 2,200 years. And so, of course, we've had time to develop a diverse and interesting cuisine. It's a cuisine that has endless regional variations because Italy was only unified 150 years ago, and prior to that, it was a cluster of different city-states. Can you still hear me?
Yes, I can. Absolutely. Can you hear me?
Yeah, just a little bit. Fuzzy every now and then. So so we have 2,200 years of history for Italian kosher cooking, and it's really fusion cooking, because the first Jews to arrived from ancient Israel during the Roman times. But then they were followed later by Ashkenazi Jews who arrived in the Middle Ages, and then by Jews who arrived from Spain, Portugal, and Turkey, in other cities, including Venice, where I'm from. And they all brought new foods and new preparation methods, which created an incredibly flavorful and varied cooking.
Very good. Let's put you on hold for a second while we bring in one of the other callers.
Great. Thanks, Chaim.
Okay, please stay online.
Sure.
You talk.
Hello, everybody. Alessandra?
Yes.
Alessandra?
Yes. Hello.
Are you there?
Yes, I'm
here.
Hi,
Alessandra. Okay,
yes.
Good. Now I can hear you very well, but we're trying to gather, you know, and welcome the rest of the guests onto the show. So they're in the queue and they're calling in. Before you continue on with what I think is what our readers or our listeners want very much to hear is about the Jews of Italy. Just hold on one second. While we're welcoming, is anybody else there? Esti? Hello?
There's nothing happening here. It's happening here now.
Hello?
Yes, it's still Alessandra.
Okay, so Alessandra, let me talk for a little bit about right now there are about 6,500 people listening on Blog Talk Radio to Kosher Scene on average when the show is live. And on archive, if you can imagine, there are between 3,500 and 5,000 people out there. So we'd love to hear back from you. And right now we're hoping to have five people calling into the show tonight.
Yes.
And there's a little bit of a delay it seems like, on the radio. So I'm talking to you, and then it plays live on the blog radio.
Okay.
So, Esty, are you there? I'm not sure why Esty is not able to get in. Okay, Suzanne is still in the queue. Marlene from the Jewish Hostess. I called about 4 times, and she can hear us, but we can't hear her. Marlene, I cannot hear you, but I am glad. Esty Berkowitz also holding. Wow, what a lineup. Also, Marlene's on hold, but you can't hear her either. Very exciting. Esty Berkowitz, she has a blog about how she found kosher food, a husband, and had children after 35. She's fabulous. You can follow her on Twitter at Primetime Parent, or keep up with her on primetimeparenting.com. She listens to, you can listen to her at Jewish Schmooze Network on Blog Talk Radio about kosher food. So lots of things going on out there. Marlene, we had the pleasure to meet last night at Nagila Grill, where Michael was very wonderful to host us. And Marlene has tapped into the Syrian community and their beautiful entertaining and recipes. And she interviewed about 400 elders in the Syrian community, told us a lot about the traditions and how they've been handed down. And she's doing a terrific weekly kosher newsletter, thejewishhostess.com. So that's very exciting, and we'll hear more from her. Alessandra, you still there?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay, good. I'm just trying to give a little background on everybody until they get on. And maybe, Chaim, can you talk a little bit about Suzanne?
Susanna Ruff from the Kosher Shopaholic has a very interesting blog.
Her blog, Shoshana,
right, right. It's a very interesting blog that basically tells you about all types of deals, whether in fashion, whether in food, how to get coupons. One of her posts is specifically about how you can cut down your expenses without having to cut down the quality of what it is you want to get. Right now we have... Are you there?
Hello?
Hello?
Can anybody hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes, now we can hear you. Now we can hear you. Okay.
Wonderful.
You're calling in from Muncie.
Yes, thank you so much, Chaim. This is Shoshana Raff calling in from Muncie, and my website is The Kosher Shopaholic, and I talk about how everything to do with shopping for the kosher consumer, food, restaurants, grocery shopping, fashion, and especially deals. I came up with my website. It's brand new. I started it about a month ago, really as an experiment. I was at the gym one day, and I saw a show on TLC called Extreme Couponing, and I couldn't believe what was going on, how people go shopping to grocery stores and they buy hundreds and hundreds of dollars worth of groceries for their families. They walk out only paying $10 through this extreme couponing strategy. So my first thought was, could this work for the kosher consumer? So I decided to try it out. I decided to try an experiment and write about my experience. And within the first week of starting to coupon and following the extreme couponing strategies, looking for sales and coupons, I started saving between 35 and 50% off of my weekly grocery bill. So I wrote about it in a blog called The 7 Steps to Kosher Savings. And I talk about just all great ways to save money, because we all love to shop and we all need to shop. And so I talk about ways that you can save money without compromising the quality of the products that you're buying, without compromising kosher standards. And most important without spending too much extra time in the process. So my strategy is not an extreme strategy because, you know, as the Rambam says, it's not very good to be extreme about anything. We do all things in moderation.
I really,
is the healthiest way to do things.
I was trying to get
Mira
and Chaim upstairs.
Hold on 1 second.
Hello?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes. Should I
Chaim?
Can you hear me?
Yes, this is Chaim.
Can you hear Marlene?
Yes, I can.
Oh, okay.
Hi, Marlene. Okay.
Yeah.
Finally, I can identify people. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, Marlene, can you tell us a little bit about your blog?
Yeah, sure. Well, first of all, as Kim said, I am from, you know, the Syrian community in Brooklyn. And a little bit about my background is for the past 3 years I've been working on a documentary about our history, and I did interview about 300 elders of the community, so it really educated me. And what really struck a chord within me... I'm sorry? Oh, what really struck a chord and what really resonated in my heart was that really it's the women of the community, of every Jewish community, that really keep the traditions alive, and it's really our responsibility to connect the family in a beautiful way. And so I decided to create the Jewish Hostess, in which Jewish women all over the world can really connect. And, you know, many times, you know, every time we stop to
very good.
Turn
You're
around.
Breaking up, Marlene.
You can't hear me? Hello?
We can hear you. I can hear you, but now I can hear you perfectly.
Oh, better? Okay.
Okay.
So, you know,
very good.
Many times, many, you know, all of us, every time we turn around, there's another holiday meal to prepare. There's another
Absolutely.
Dinner to prepare. So, you know, from Rosh Hashanah to Kippur to Sukkot, it never ends. And sometimes we just get overwhelmed and we forget that, you know, our real purpose is to create family bonds and to create great memories and a great atmosphere for the family. And so, you know, we want our kids to continue our traditions just the way our grandmothers did. So the goal of the Jewish Hostess website is to unite modern Jewish women all over the world through the internet in a very cool way by sharing photos of our holiday tables and delicious recipes. And right before Shavuot and Pesach, I had a table setting contest where I encouraged women to take photos of their tables before the holiday. And
well,
I got so excited.
As I look at your blog, I see some very, very beautifully set tables. Just looking at those tables alone is enough to make me hungry.
Yeah.
I guess that's the idea.
Yeah, it's the idea because I get so excited when people send me in their photos and everybody, and I think it's so amazing getting a peek into different women's tables and dining rooms, and really it's so inspiring to me. I mean, I had one girl that sent in a beautiful table setting, and all she did was like put a flower inside a medicine tube, like a test tube in front of each plate and on a Pottery Barn placemat. And she, the way she said it was so gorgeous. I would never even think to do it the way she did. And then another woman from Florida, an elderly woman from Florida, sent in her table that she was actually a hidden child in the Holocaust in Poland. And there was a Polish family that protected her during the Holocaust. And as Hakarat Hatov towards this family, she continually visited them and continually collected glassware from Poland. So her table was set with these beautiful, assorted, different, beautifully colored glasses from Poland. And her table is just awesome and sentimental and amazing in her way. So I find it so beautiful to just see what everybody does, and it's just so inspiring to me. You know, we should all take out some of our antiques and mix with the old with the new, and you can make your own napkin rings. You don't have to go spend millions of dollars. But just the idea of hidur mitzvah, of enhancing the mitzvah of each holiday, is just is just something we shouldn't forget. And that's what I want to do with the Jewish Host, is I want to encourage women to come see the site and all chip in and pitch in, and we'll all, you know, get to know each other through the way that we entertain.
Excellent. So, and now let me introduce Esty Berkowitz from Primetime Parenting. Esty, can you hear us?
Hi. Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you perfectly.
And you probably could hear my three children that have not gone to bed yet, because my husband just came home from actually shopping at Aaron's here in Queens, which is a beautiful, beautiful kosher supermarket. Now we have two amazing kosher supermarkets, which leads me into, you know, I'm sure you want to know a little bit about why I started my blog, but I'll let you start.
Hello.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, I hear you.
Oh, good.
Okay.
Hey, Esty, how are you? It's Kim from Kosher Inspired and Mustafa.
I'm good. I guess I could, you know, I could start by talking about why I started my blog.
That would be great. I think, you know, we're not sure exactly what happened. I just want to back up for a second. Marlene, you're there, right?
I'm still here, if you can hear me.
Okay, great. Yes, I can. Yes. Esty, you're there, and I'm here, and Chaim and I are here together.
Can you hear me? I'm still here also.
Who's that, Shoshana?
Yes.
Hi, how are you? I just want to I want to give a little introduction. You guys are all on the phone. Who's the other person? No, I think that's it, right?
No, it's Alessandra.
Oh, Alessandra, you there? Great. You were so quiet over there. Okay, I want to just, now that we're all on the phone, I just want to back up just for a second and give a little bit of background to those listeners who might have just tuned in or called in, who we all are, what we're doing here, and what happened last night. Okay, I think we should back up a little bit. Last night we had the pleasure to be invited by Nargila Grill on York Avenue in Manhattan between 84th and 85th Street. Normally they serve Israeli food, and his brother is Bukharian. And on next Wednesday night at 7 o'clock, we will be there live doing from Nargila Grill a live blog radio show with Bukharian food. And we invited a great group of fabulous Jewish women doing great things in the area of kosher food. So Chaim Schmidt from Kosher Scene was gracious enough to host us. And Esty Berkowitz, as usual, picked up the ball. And together, we got together a great group of people. And we sat together in person last night, which was really nice. Some of us meeting for the first time. Other of us have met through Metro Ima and other social media gatherings. So I want to just tell you a little bit about each one of us, and then, Esty, I want you to explain, you know, how and why you got to what you're doing. Marlene, who just spoke, has a fabulous weekly email and has a website that she started just a couple of years ago called The Jewish Hostess, and she comes from the Syrian community. And Esty lives in Queens, and she has Primetime Parenting. Alessandra Rovati only started her blog a couple of weeks ago called Dinner in Venice, and already it's getting tremendous, tremendous reception. I was so impressed with Alessandra when I met her. She was doing an introduction to Susie Fishbein cooking demonstration for the Jewish International Connection New York on the West Side. I knew that we were doing a whole big thing on Italian cooking, and I asked Esty Kaffra, our editor-in-chief of Kosher Inspired. She was formerly the food editor for 4 years at Bina magazine. Esty lives in Toronto but comes out of the Haredi world in Borough Park, and she's a very known entity with two cookbooks under her belt, one called Cooking with Color and the other one Spice It Right. So Esty Kaffra and I met a few years ago when I had a booth, when I was the launch publisher of a magazine called Jewish Living, and Esty said, "It's my dream to have a kosher food-only magazine." And when she decided to leave Bina magazine, she was only doing maybe 2 to 4 pages of food editorial every week, and she knew that there was a great hunger in the Haredi community, in a very, you know, shadow-wearing, observant crowd, to have an entire food magazine. So she left Bina magazine, and she joined forces with Mishpacha, and she actually came and found me through LinkedIn, and that's how our partnership was formed in August. So we set to work, and we chose the name Kosher Inspired, and we launched a magazine, a Kosher Fest. And since then, we've published 5 issues, and we've highlighted some of the top kosher cookbook authors, including Levana Kirschenbaum, Noreen Gillett, Susie Fishbein, Jamie Geller, and we've had some other things. And I also just want to give a call out to wish Jamie Geller lots of good luck with her new magazine, Joy of Kosher. I think the testimony that there are now 5 new kosher food magazines on the ground and that the landscape has changed dramatically just since October when we launched Kosher Inspired at the trade show Kosher Fest in October is extraordinary, and it's a testament to what's going on out there. And one of the things that we discussed last night that was so wonderful, and we are redoing the show because we thought it was so exciting what we spoke about at the table, and there was so much dynamism and energy and coming from different points of view, that we decided to retape the show tonight for you live without the unfortunate background noise that we had some technical problems. So we're retaping the show tonight for you because the Blog Talk Radio will allow it to be archived. And again, just in case you don't know, you can access Blog Talk Radio / Kosher Scene, KosherScene. So it's
blogtalkradio.com.
blogtalkradio.com / kosher scene. So I encourage you, you know, if you are listening for the first time, that you can go back and listen to other wonderful shows that Chaim has recorded. As things are moving along, we're getting better and better. But I just want to mention the magazines that are now in play, and I think it's exciting and important to let everybody know what's out there. We want to play nicely in the sandbox together, not only across social media with our various websites, but with the magazines too. And eventually, I think those magazines will each find their own audiences, those people that prefer one format or another. There's the ongoing debate of whether we should have a magazine which is a tactile magazine with paper and turn the pages the old-fashioned way, or do people want to read cooking recipes and ideas on the internet. So there's a huge struggle out there in the general industry, and it's as true for Jewish media as well and kosher food magazines. So the magazines that are in play are Betei Avon, Bits and Bites, Joy of Kosher, Bina Magazine, Kosher Inspired, Ami, and Mishpach Magazine, which has its own food section in its Family First Weekly Woman's Magazine, which is fabulous. So I think that that's a testimony to how many different kinds of women are looking for ideas and ways to be inspired, which is why we chose the name Kosher Inspired. Women are the ones that gather around the table. They bring people to their table. They entertain. They cook. They are always getting ready for Shabbat and the Chagim and even just regular weekday entertainment. They've got to put food on the table for their families and their kids. So each one of us are doing a unique contribution. So Shoshana, who goes by Susanna, Shoshana is kosher shopaholic. It was so interesting. She has an MBA. She's based in Muncie. I'm based in Manhattan. So we're getting all these different Sephardic, Ashkenazi, and various points of view because each community has a different spark. And together we're really sharing ideas and want to bring those ideas out you to the listening public, to Kosher Scene's blogtalkradio.com show. And we hope that you'll tune in, usually on Wednesday nights at 7 o'clock. But the shows are archived, again, blogtalkradio.com/ Kosher Scene. So with that introduction, I just want to say thank you for listening, and thank you again last night to Michael, who hosted us at Nargila Grill. And Esty, I want you to jump in now and you know, sort of catch us up to you and how you came to be.
Oh, yes. Well, thank you so much for the nice introduction. I actually found a quiet place in my house, so you won't hear 3 children who have not gone to bed yet. But the kosher world to me, actually my blog title, Primetime Parenting, is about making, basically in my 30s, I changed a lot of things. And one of them, which is the tagline, how I found kosher food, a husband and had children after 35, is really true. And I grew up never having kosher food and actually being turned off from it, which is, you know, just because of where I might have gone or something like that. But once my journey of becoming more observant and then going to houses that served meals and, you know, at their homes that weren't just Ashkenaz, actually. They were of a Chilean, a South American flavor, Italian. You know, I really became, and from that night it kind of came together with me as well, what really helped me fall back in love with my Judaism, which is such a rich history. And the women at the table last night were such a phenomenal example of the place where we were, Nargila Grill, the food, the conversation. I'm like, this is what we need to talk about in Judaism. We have so much beautiful, rich culture. You know, Kim, your article that you wrote about Nemuna, you know, I mean, amazing. So, you know, again, becoming a parent in my 30s, having children, being, you know, new to the kosher food world, and having to get my immediate family and my husband, who's also Balei Tshuva, you know, our family excited about eating with us, you know, because we are now keeping kosher in our home. And as you guys can see, that our world has just evolved, and the supermarkets that are popping up that are just like Whole Foods supermarkets, they're beautiful, pomegranate, now Aaron's, now Seasons, and it's just something that I think my parents' generation would have never dreamed of, but all the gluten-free options that are kosher certified, lactose intolerant, I mean, we're just bringing so many people together. So again, on my journey and the blog starting, it just kind of developed, and the parenting spin, and of course, when you're a parent traveling, you know, you need to think about your food. We always go with our kosher cooler. We have to be prepared on the road. And even when we go to our families, we need to know that we have enough kosher food. If the supermarket doesn't have a nice, you know, a big enough kosher department, we need to make sure that we have what we need.
Very good. And now I would like to... hear a little bit from the two Sephardi bloggers, from Marlene, who represents the Syrian community, and from
Alessandra.
From Alessandra Rovati, who represents the Italian community. Now, tell us a little bit, describe the main differences between what we call the Eastern European cuisine and the cuisine, the Sephardi cuisine. And yes, I realize there are differences between Syrian cuisine and Italian cuisine, but there are also some points in common, much more so than with the rest, in the case of Alessandra, with the rest of the European cuisine. Let's hear what...
Marlene, do you want to go first?
I could tell you something interesting I found that while we were doing our interviews of, you know, of the elders of the Syrian community, the ones that came from Syria on the boat to the Lower East Side, you know, where they, you know, really were just starting anew, many of them really were trying to make their meals and recipes according to how they had learned back in Syria. And they found that the Ashkenazi Jews, you know, they went to Eldridge Street where there were a lot of Ashkenazi Jews living before them, and they shopped in those areas, and they really couldn't find a lot of the vegetables and that they were used to cooking with back in Syria. So they, you know, I think one of the women that we interviewed said, oh, they had, you know, the typical apples, oranges, you know, cucumbers, things like that, but they really couldn't find what they needed. They needed, like, eggplants and the peppers and the vegetables, the squash that they used for stuffing. So what they found was that they had to walk over to Mulberry Street where there was an Italian bunch of immigrants settling over there in the tenements on Mulberry Street, And that's where they found the vegetables that they needed for stuffing and for the authentic Syrian foods. So I found that really interesting. So I guess the Sephardic and the Italian Jews probably, Alessandra, have that in common. And so they used to have to really schlep like bags of vegetables back a couple of blocks over to their tenements in the, you know, in the, on the Lower East Side. Like they didn't have cars or anything like that. So, you know, it was
not
really
in those
a struggle.
Days, no.
In those days, yeah, it was a struggle. So that's, you know, that's one of the differences in our foods is I think the some of the vegetables that we
use. Also, and there's also another reason why there are some differences. And Gilmar said it on my show a couple of months ago, that until 1840, Ashkenazi Jews in Eastern Europe, and I found this very, very hard to believe, and it doesn't make us Ashkenazim sound very good, did not eat vegetables, because if the vegetable did not exist, if they did not have a tradition of the vegetable existing in Eretz Israel, then obviously they wouldn't try it, because if it had been good and if it had been healthy, it would have existed in Eretz Israel. For example, up until 1840, they did not eat potatoes. In 1840, there was a horrible famine throughout Europe, and all of a sudden, potatoes and vegetables became acceptable food out of desperation.
And now that's all they eat.
Now, right, there was nothing else to eat. In fact, when they first saw tomatoes, they were so amazed at this. It didn't exist in the Middle East at the time, and again, it's hard to believe imagining anybody in the Mediterranean basin, including the Middle East, sitting down for a meal without tomatoes these days. But it didn't exist, and the Ashkenazi Jews called it trefen apple, non-kosher apples. Everybody, in just about every meal we include it.
I can also think of another difference. Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I just remembered something else that a couple of the elders of the community said, and I even remember growing up, you know, Friday night, we didn't have challah. We had Syrian bread that my father, and my father even said his grandfather before him, they really used Syrian bread Friday night to say the hamotzi. And what they would do is, what our tradition is to, like, rip off a piece and we throw it to each family member, the oldest first, you know, going down, you know, in age. And the reason why we throw it is they say that, you know, when, like, God forbid, when somebody's in mourning, they pass the bread to them. So here now we throw it to, you know, provide that separation.
Mm-hmm.
And I always thought
right.
that you have to have challah to have a Friday night. Like, it's not Friday night until you have challah. But I think that's really what we got by, you know, absorbing the culture of the Ashkenazi Jews over here over the years.
Right. In America.
You know? So it's funny. Like, my kids think that you have to have challah on the table when they, you know, they don't even know that their grandfather, you know, really started with just plain old Syrian bread on the table. And it was like that for 3,000 years before them, you know, in Syria. So it's interesting.
Alessandra.
Yes. Well, first of all, I have a disclaimer, which is that, you know, like Italian Jews are not necessarily Sephardim because, you know, Jews have been in Italy for 2,200 years. So since long before the concepts of Ashkenazim and Sephardim existed and the Jews of Rome, those that, you know, descend from the first Roman Jews have actually their own Nusach. Which is called Bnei Roma, the children of Rome, and it's really different from both the Ashkenazi and the Sephardic. Then of course we do have people we do have Jews of Ashkenazi origins and of Sephardic origins, but we all consider ourselves in a way like you know culturally maybe closer to the Sephardim just because we live in Italy, which is a country on the Mediterranean. But you know technically we're not all Sephardim and we're not all Italian and we're not all Ashkenazi, we're a mix.
Right.
But in terms of food, I the first thing that I want to say is that I always had the impression that Ashkenazi Jews suffer of trefen a little bit, which means they eat their own kosher food because we we have to for religious reasons, but deep down they always think that the grass is, that, you know, the grass is always greener on their trace counterpart backyards. But in Italy, it's almost the opposite. I think that the non-Jews, the Gentiles in Italy, suffer of Jewish envy. There's even an old proverb, often quoted in Italy, that says, dress like a Turk but eat like a Jew, implying that Jewish cooking is the most delicious of all, including more delicious than general Italian cuisine, which is always already supposed to be excellent. And it's also very interesting. There are a lot of contradictions, because for many centuries there were foods that the Jews ate, because some of the Jews had arrived from Arab countries where these vegetables were eaten, such as eggplant and fennel or artichokes. And
right.
Christians would not eat them in public in general, because they were thought to be vulgar food of the Jews in Italy. They were not used before. And some of them were even thought to be dangerous. For example, eggplant in Italy for many centuries it was even named in melanzana, which comes from Latin, mela insana, which means a bad, poisoned apple. It was thought to have poisonous properties that would cause people who ate it to go mad. But the Jews ate it. And finally, when the Christians gave in, these foods became actually among the most famous Italian foods, because now what do we think of in terms of, you know, what do people all over the world think of when they think of a standard famous Italian dish? Melanzane parmigiana, eggplant, or baked fennel, and also the fried artichokes. And these were all, you know, centuries ago, these were all vegetables that only the Jews would eat. So I think this is the main
thing. I want to just jump in. Alessandra?
Yes.
Hi, it's
yes.
Kim. I just wanted to jump in just to make a point, because the Moroccan Jews, of course, had the same access, because they were also Mediterranean. They weren't Italian, but they had access to all of those identical vegetables, so there was no such thing as a hierarchy. The Jews and the Arabs were very famous for their hospitality. And I heard Marlene say earlier about throwing the bread. That's still a custom that we do on Shabbat. We do not pass the bread around on a plate, and it does go from the oldest. It's even further. The husband of the table does the motzi. He first throws it, my husband, to me, and then to my, you know, whoever is there. If his mother is there, then she would get kavod after, and then, of course, in the order of the children and so on. But that's a very specific thing, and we don't do it because it's a separation from people who have passed away, but we don't hand the bread because you give bread to somebody who's poor or in poverty. So the two things I just wanted to jump in that I think are very interesting is that the Moroccan Jews are also Mediterranean, use fennel and eggplant and all the same vegetables and things that were readily and very plentifully available in Morocco. So they, too, had many, many salads. And one of the things that Marlene and I shared last night is that the Moroccans have many, many common customs with the Syrians. Of course, it's both Sephardic cuisine. And, you know, I, after being married for 26 years to a Moroccan, which is why I wrote that article about Mimouna in the Passover issue, for those of you who didn't have a chance to see it, the feedback was unbelievable, especially from the Ashkenazim who had never heard of it. The last night of Passover when there was a separation from the time of, you know, of doing business with the Arabs. The Jews would come into themselves for the 8 days of Passover. And last night, Shoshana, are you there?
I'm here, yes.
Shoshana asked an unbelievably interesting question that provided the dialogue between me and Marlene. Shoshana said, how is it possible to get the Mimouna table prepared so beautifully if it has, you know, chametz in it? And Marlene aptly answered that in the Arab countries, in the Syrians, they had a relationship with the Syrians, with the non-Jews, and as did the Moroccans with the Arabs. And therefore, they were able to bring the bread, and they brought the chametz, and were able to provide the Jewish families with some of the things on the table that they would not have had in their home during Pesach. course, the very famous muffuletta, which I had Kim Kushner from KimKushnerCuisine.com. She's Moroccan from Montreal, and she came here. She brought me malawa. Marlene was mentioning that malawa was something very common. And in Morocco, they have muffuletta, very simple, made with flour and water and oil. And you make it like a very thin crepe, and that's a very famous delicacy for the night of Mimouna, where people would eat it with honey and butter, and the table would be laden with sweets like orange. It's not a marmalade. It's really a confiture or grapefruit confiture or even eggplant, Alessandro. They would make, with the eggplants, they would make it into a confiture. And these
we also make a sweet confiture with eggplants. I love it. We make that too. Yeah.
So, you know, last night I was, it's so hard to listen. It's so interesting to hear Alessandra talk, and each one of you bring something so dynamic to the show, but it's hard not to jump in and see, you know, I want the reader, the listeners to hear what we were discussing last night. And Marlene said, I remember going from house to house to my Moroccan friends when she grew up in Flatbush, because there were Moroccan friends and Syrian and Ashkenazi. But the Ashkenazi people, you know, my friends who had read the article that appeared in Kosher Inspired Passover Yisrael and Mimouna, said, I never heard of that tradition. And, oh, what a nice thing, which is very typical of the Moroccan hospitality. And, you know, being married to a Moroccan for 26 years, I've learned a lot. Like Esti, I did not grow up in a religious home. I consider myself Bal Tshuva. My kids all go to, you know, Jewish schools. My daughter just got back from Israel. And, you know, I very frequently am hosting Shabbat. Tomorrow night I'm doing a welcome home dinner for my daughter who just got back from being in Israel for the seminary for the year. And my cuisine is, my recipes adapted. It's less for a sort of a form of meatball, ground. I mix, like to mix ground veal and ground meat. And I'll do it with onions and zucchini, or onions and raisins, or both. So that's very nice. I like to use white raisins. But we also start with a fish course, and my husband invented a gefilte fish recipe, which is jarred gefilte fish with the jelly, which I cook with onions and carrots and dried herbs de Provence and some saffron with a cup of hot water with saffron, and I cook it down, and people who come to my table, whether they are Ashkenaz or Sephardic, they love it, and it's gefilte fish served hot. So, you know, I serve rice on Friday nights because my kids like it. That's not very Moroccan. So there's not a pure cuisine, a pure Moroccan cuisine happening at my table. It's a variation. My mother's Italian, so a lot of my influence came that way. And I imagine that, you know, a more typical Moroccan house might serve couscous instead of rice on a Friday night. So, I don't know. Marlene, what do you usually serve Friday night? What's a typical Syrian Friday night dinner?
Well, I'll tell you something, Kim. I know that, like, the generation of, like, my grandmother's age, they would generally serve the same dishes as me, but with a lot more fat ground in, and either, you know, if it was Friday night, or the dairy meals would be with a lot of butter. And I feel like our generation of Syrian girls are trying to make the same foods as our grandmothers, but we're just trying to really either substitute turkey ground meat for the beef, or chicken ground meat inside. Like Friday night, we have something called mehshi. And you can make, mehshi is a stuffed vegetable, so you can make mehshi out of, you can scoop the middle of a carrot out, the middle of a tomato out, an eggplant. You can take big Spanish onions and you steam them a little bit till it's soft, and then you peel off each layer by layer by layer, and then you can stuff it with a mixture of, which traditionally was beef and short grain rice. But now I know a lot of my friends, and I put turkey ground meat and sometimes even brown rice instead of white rice, just to try to make it a little healthier, and that's called mehshi, and we cook it with tamarhindi, which is called oot, O-U-R-T, that's how we spell it, and it's actually from the tamarhindi plant. I don't do it myself, but we buy it in a jar, like in a lot of Middle Eastern stores in the area. You can buy a jar of tamarhindi, which is from the tamarhindi plant, and it's like a sweet and sour concoction, dark brown, thick, and we mix it with water, and some people add lemon juice and a little sugar, and it, you boil, you cook it, and it's really so good. That's like a staple for a Friday night dinner with us. And it's funny, like, yeah, now we'll make, I'll make challah, and, you know, my kids will think it's Syrian, but it's really not. But I'll put on top of the challah, I'll put za'atar spice, and I'll make a whole wheat challah, and we'll put the Syrian za'atar spice on top. So it's kind of like we're absorbing in America, like, the different cultures, which I think is very nice, you know. And I'll make white rice. Some of my kids love the white rice, and I'll make brown rice for the others. And, you know, it's just interesting to see how, you know, we're bringing in the modern-day American Jew combined with our culture, too, you know?
I love it. You know, yeah. I just wanted to also mention that there are 8 minutes remaining on the show, and there's so much to talk about. I just want to touch base on your health. You brought up that beautiful point of, you know, trying to eat more healthfully. We even see in the Haredi community that was late. They're jumping on the bandwagon. That's why, you know, Esti Kaffra, in every single issue, we wrote about quinoa, we wrote about shirataki noodles. We see that, you know, in the mainstream, in the modern Orthodox community, you know, my friends have been cooking healthy and eating like that for years now. It's just the way we need to be. If we want to be healthy ourselves and we want our husbands and our children to be healthy, even if there are allergies involved, we all are very conscious. And it's, I think, ubiquitous now that we're all trying to do the same thing. And I think that Kosher Inspired is definitely taking a position. And we're excited. I want to give Lavana Kirshenbaum a plug. She was supposed to be with us. And her fourth cookbook is coming out now. Lavana cooks authentic. Lavana and the Whole Foods. Can somebody help me here? It's the Whole Foods Kitchen.
Yes.
Eating your way to a healthy lifestyle. And Lavana has been, the reason she comes to my mind right now is because for as long as I know Lavana, and amazingly, she catered the bris of my 24-year-old son who just got married a year ago, and my 15-year-old son, and now
and Kim, this is Sandra. I met my husband. I went on my first date with my husband at Lavana's restaurant.
At Lavana's restaurant, you know, the restaurant was
open
for 30 years. Alessandra said she went on her first date with her husband there. That restaurant was open for 30 years, and Lavana.
Everybody has a story. Everybody has a Lavana story.
Yes. And we're all very close with her, and unfortunately she was not able to be with us, but she's been on the, you know, Whole Foods and eating naturally and really eating our way to a healthier lifestyle for a very long time. She never served her kids fish sticks or, you know, hot dogs. I remember she gave a cooking class where she was making sweet and sour soup. And she came to the Manhattan Sephardic congregation. She did a cooking demonstration. She was saying, I never served my children those fast foods. I wanted to crawl under the table. I had three kids. I was working, and I was serving my kids fish sticks and hot dogs and pizza. And not to mention, of course, healthy foods as well. But over the years, I've become much more conscious of, you know, what I'm feeding my family and what we're eating as a whole. And so I thank Lavana for that, and I wish her a lot of good luck with the book. She now has her book on sale for $8.95 because she's going to reprint her book into something more upscale because she doesn't really like the way that the photographs came out, and she's going to make her other three previous books are really beautiful, and I think she was a little disappointed with the way that this book came out. However, they are both available. Lavana's cookbook is available at Amazon. Okay. And also, I just want to make a plug for Gila Hockerman, is a very special new friend of ours. She's going to be doing some writing for us, and we're going to get her on Kosher Scene as well. All of you will get to know her. Her name is Gila Hockerman, GeilaHocherman. She's writing a brand new book that will be out in September. She already sold 4,000 copies. It's called Kosher Revolution, and it's going to be sold at Costco. So I know, and I feel like we have our hand on the pulse here about all of you and what we together and collectively are doing in the world of kosher food, and I'm excited about it. So I hope that Chaim will have us all on again. And I don't know, any closing words? Who wants to jump in? Shoshana? You haven't said a word.
You didn't hear me? I thought I spoke earlier before.
You know what? Why don't you recap and say hello and reintroduce yourself
Hi.
Again?
Okay, so I'm Shoshana Raff. Thank you so much for having me. And I have a blog called The Kosher Shopaholic, www.koshershopaholic.com. And I talk about how the kosher shopper can save money and get, you know, great deals without compromising on quality standards, on kosher standards.
Why don't you also...
I'm sorry? Hello? And I talk about there's an amazing way...
As we say goodbye, why doesn't each one of you also give the address of your blog so people can start going to your blog so we can cause more interaction between potential readers, bloggers, and therefore there will be more interesting questions.
And advertisers.
Let's start.
Okay, so
let's go alphabetical.
Okay,
go ahead.
I think it was Marlene. So I'm Marlene Mamie, and my blog is, my site is HTTP. www.thejewishhostess.com, and you can come visit us and check out all the gorgeous Shavuot table settings that people sent in, and we're going to vote for the winner who wins a great prize, and you know, so please come visit us at the Jewish Hostess.
And I'm Alessandra Robati. My blog is called dinnerinvenice.com. Dinner in Venice is only one word. dinnerinvenice.com. I also have a Facebook page. If you're on Facebook, you go on Facebook and look for a page called Kosher Italian Kitchen. And by the way, I still have a lot of friends who are not married, so if you know of any nice guys, you can contact me through my website as well. Sorry, but I had to plug this in.
That's okay. It's part of being Jewish, isn't it? Okay, and next, Esty.
Yes, Esty Berkowitz, again, primetimeparenting.com, a blog about getting married later, having children later, and changing your whole eating situation, but loving it and being inspired by others who also cook well and love it. And also, I want to plug primetimeradiance.com, which is where we have virtual parties where you can win prizes from healthy kosher products that we talk about, that are good for you, and we say that it's healthy, it keeps you healthy, wealthy, and ecologically wise, things that are good for you and good for the environment. And on Twitter, you can follow me at PrimetimeParent. And I actually have a Facebook page I started a while ago, but it's Kosher Healthy Food. So if you have food products that you feel are healthy and kosher and you want people to know about it, please go there, list it, and share it.
Okay, and Susanna?
Hi, are you able to hear me? Can
you
hear me?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm not sure if I was cut off before. So I have a website called the Kosher Shopaholic, www.koshershopaholic.com. And inspired by the extreme couponing craze, I talk about how people can save money while shopping for their kosher products. So whether it's grocery shopping in the kosher stores, in a regular supermarket, shopping for your clothing for your family, going out to restaurants.
Shoshana. Okay, Shoshana, we're almost out of time.
Okay.
Okay, so good night, everyone, and thank
you
from Kosher Scene. Bye, everybody. Thank you. This is Kim from
Kosher
Scene.
Thank you so much, Kim and Time. Thank you. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you
very much to one and all. Thank you to all the mom bloggers that were with us. Thank you to the audience. And we have some exciting programs coming up. Please tune us in again at blacktalkradio.com/kosherscene. Meanwhile, check out our blog at kosherscene.wordpress.com. Thank you very much, and we'll see you next week. Good night.